Malcolm Holland, Conference of Presidents. A very good evening to you. We turn to a tension in the Middle East. Israel, our ally, the aircraft carrier that will not sink, and the question of resupply or building supplies for Israel's security, given the unclear threats that are coming from the east, that would be Iran. Malcolm and I welcome General Charles Wald, former deputy commander of the United States European Command, U.S. Air Force retired. The general served on a recent report from the JINSA, the Jewish Intelligence Network Service report, that he served with his colleagues, Admiral Stavridis, Lieutenant General Gardner, Lieutenant General Obering, to identify what the problem is about the arsenal or the stockpile or the support of Israel. General, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for this. There is a problem. What does it look like, Chuck? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John and Malcolm. I appreciate you having me on. The problem you described is long-running, but it's waxes and wanes. But right now the issue is the instability in the Middle East, mainly caused by Iran and surrogates, and their intent to see that Israel doesn't exist anymore. That's basically the bottom line. The issue is the United States is our number one ally in the world is without a doubt Israel. We're committed to Israel as if it is part of our own country. There's no doubt about that. The United States is being stretched thin by other countries that aren't really interested in our good, you know, the goodness of America or our safety. That would be China, Russia, Iran, North Korea. You can down the list, Venezuela. Iran is the existential threat in the Middle East. And then you have Hezbollah that's not too far behind, which is basically an extension of Iran. And Hezbollah in Lebanon, as you know, John and Malcolm, have purportedly over 120,000 rockets, missiles, guided missiles now, pointed toward Israel. And that doesn't count the rockets in the Gaza, albeit smaller range, but still as lethal, and rockets coming out of Yemen from the Houthis, and who knows what else, in Iraq for that matter. I think there's some purported discussion out there after the attack on Saudi Arabia's oil, Abqaiq and Kuwait, that came over Iraq. So you never know. But the point of this whole thing is that Israel needs to be able to defend itself, not tomorrow, not the next day, not next week, not next month, but tonight. So if something happens, they, number one, need to be defending themselves immediately. They can't wait for reinforcements from the United States, or even though they will show up, but you can't wait. Number two is the enemy, in this case Iran or Hezbollah or the Houthis or you name it, have to realize that Israel has the capacity to retaliate in a huge way to an existential threat in return. The issue will be the number of munitions that are in pre-positioned in Israel. As you might know, right now the United States government has pledged $30 billion to Israel over the next 10 years to buy military sophisticated equipment that is used to defend Israel. That's spread out with obviously $3 billion a year. Our contention is we should move some of that money up front into the 10-year window and beef up Israel's supply of precision munitions primarily, but other needed capabilities early on in a reasonably public way that provides a deterrent for Israel.
I would say this report from the Jewish Institute for National Security of America is very public. It's online. Malcolm?
Yes. There are so many questions about this. Number one, has Israel withdrawn or used the strategic stockpile to date, and how do you see this as increasing the stockpile, benefiting, given the U.S. direction of reduced regional footprint, and given the shortage of precision missiles, can we learn from Iran's strategy of U.S. providing the guidance systems and packages?
Well, absolutely, you can do all that. I think the issue is the stockpile being drawn down. No, the Israelis have a day-to-day stockpile, just like any country does. The stockpile I'm talking about is weapons reserve in case of a larger conflict, or even if a large preemptive strike needs to be made, because it isn't going to be over in one day. There's so many targets in Iran. There's so many targets in Lebanon and the Bekaa Valley and other places that it would take more than one day to take care of the problem. Now, if it's a preemptive strike by the, let's call the enemy, the Iran or Hezbollah, there's a real advantage in preemption, even though there's reasonably good intelligence. You still can have a bolt out of the blue, so to speak. And if that happens, Israel's going to have to really start generating a huge amount of sorties, flights, aircraft flights, missions, to be able to get in and service those threatening missiles that hadn't been fired yet. And by that time, it could be fairly destructive to Israel. So there's got to be a deterrence initially. And if that deterrence fails, Israel's got to be able to defend itself to the point where they could take down any capability for Iran or Hezbollah. Iran's even more difficult because the distance is a lot different than into the Bekaa Valley or into Syria or into Lebanon. And the targets are more numerous in Iran and more dispersed and more deep and hardly buried. So that would be a tougher problem. But first things first, if you don't have the weapons to fire back, you're never going to be able to do it. So our feeling is the Israel, there's no better military in the world, man for man, woman for woman, than the Israelis. Nobody has any better equipment. Maybe the United States with the F-22, but everything else is as good or better in Israel. Smaller quantity, obviously. Quantity has a quality of its own, but there's nobody better than Israel. So from the standpoint of the QME, or the qualitative military edge, if you will, Israel has it. It will retain it. But again, size has a certain, you know, quantity has a quality of its own. So there'd have to be a massive amount of Israeli flights early on before the United States could reinforce or other allies, primarily us. And that would have to be done almost immediately. It would have to be done immediately to really be effective. And the other part, again, is the value of deterrence, the value that the enemy knows that Israel has the capacity to do that. And certainly they have the will. There's never been any doubt about that. So I think that would be a wise thing for us to do. Now, you mentioned about the region, maybe us departing, maybe not as much presence there. That's probably true. But we still have a pretty good presence there. We certainly have a commitment to anybody in the region that's going to be fighting against Iran. I know there's been questions about that, but we certainly will. We have the air bases there. We have the capacity to get there. The allies have good weapons. You know, it's ironic that Israel and Saudi Arabia and UAE and others share the same enemy. That's changed the dynamic in the region.
General, we just have a minute, so I have a small question with a blunt answer. Is Iran ready to shoot? Your measure. Are they ready to shoot at Israel now?
You mean, are they physically prepared? Or
yes,
are they psychologically
are they
prepared?
Physically prepared? Are they ready to pull the trigger?
You know, I think the thing people miss in Iran is they do a lot better talking tough than they do acting tough.
That's an answer. That's an answer, General. I thank you for that. I understand entirely. Former Deputy Commander of the U.S. European Command, General Charles Chuck Wald, U.S. Air Force retired. The report is online from the Jewish Information News, the Jewish Information
Institute.
Institute for National Security of America, Malcolm Holmline, Conference of Presidents, and my colleague, I'm John Batchelor.
At Jewelers Mutual, we're a little obsessed with jewelry. Obsessed like auctioneers with talking fast.
50, we're going to fifth.
Pop stars with auto-tune.
Yeah.
And dentists with asking questions.
So, how did he propose?
After they've put their hands in your mouth.
What? Great.
Yes, we've made jewelry our obsession for over 100 years. We love it so much, we named our kids Ruby, Amber, and Opal.
Venti soy latte for Opal?
At Jewelers Mutual, we insure jewelry and only jewelry. Which is why people who are also obsessed with jewelry trust us with theirs.